Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, details of the deal between the British government and the DUP, which have paved the way for the return of the Northern Ireland executive, are expected to be released later on today in Westminster. But the Belfast newsletter has published what it says are some of the details contained in that agreement, and its editor, Ben Lowry, joins me now. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
I was reading a quote from Jamie Bryson, who, as people will know, is a loyalist activist and an outspoken critic of Geoffrey Donaldson's attempts to reach this deal. And he says in the London Times that the DUP executive and the negotiators have only seen a PowerPoint presentation, which was shown to them by those who negotiated the deal on the other side, and they haven't seen the legal text. Is that your information too?
I think that they did get a summary of it, and I think that that's the nature of, well, you could say that's the nature of politics. If you want to get something through, as Sir Geoffrey Donaldson does, you are going to want it all to be done very quickly. You can say that it's too complicated and long to present, which is true to a degree, to present people at a meeting with a legal text that you don't want people to take away and they couldn't really absorb if it was shown up. So that would be the argument for the PowerPoint presentation and for the summary of it, and indeed our article. We have an article by Sir we have two things in today's paper, an article by Sir Geoffrey Donaldson sort of summarising what he thinks has been achieved, and our own access, what we have been shown through our own routes of the deal.
And we'll go through that.
Not from Sir Geoffrey Donaldson.
We'll go through that in a moment, Ben. But as we have learned over the years that we've been dealing with Brexit, the devil is always in the detail. I mean, the fact that we haven't seen the legal text, does it mean we're in a precarious position now with this deal?
No, I don't think so. So what I would say is this, that first of all, your point about Brexit and the devil is in the deal, that's true. But the other way of looking at it is that very few people understand a lot of this. And that, so, for example, those of us who have been following it closely for 8 years, in my case, because everyone of note who came in, from Boris Johnson to whoever, I tried to interview them for the newsletter. So I talked to a lot of people on both sides of the debate before Brexit. So it's all been a learning process, and it's still very complicated because very few people are constitutional experts. Very few people are trade experts. So, yes, that's true about us needing to know the detail. Will it change things? No, in this respect. What has happened is the DUP has been divided. It, you could say, is fundamentally a divide about whether or not it's good to be in Stormont or not, if you actually look at it. There's a feeling that it's good for unionists to be in Stormont, for there to be stability, to counter the Sinn Féin argument that Northern Ireland is a failed entity. And then there's the other argument that no, this is the other unionist argument, that unionists are being trapped into a situation where they are perpetually having to concede things within Stormont. And what I think happened the other night was, no matter what level of detail there was, there has been a narrow majority in the DUP, probably people making up their minds subconsciously over months, a narrow majority of the DUP to go back. So in that respect, in answer to your question, I don't think it will change things.
Okay.
What will certainly happen, could certainly happen, is that there could be a mood within unionism against what has been agreed. And I don't think the DUP ultimately will be able to control that.
Well, let's talk about what you have in the paper today about the deal as we wait for it to be published. I mean, Geoffrey Donaldson says zero check, zero customs paperwork on Northern Ireland bound goods. Is that your impression and understanding?
Well, another thing to say is that from a unionist perspective, and unionists have been scathing about a lot of things, but there was clearly a sea change with the Windsor framework. There was a number of things that the UK government did. It began to emphasise the importance, right at the top of that agreement, of Northern Ireland's place in the UK. It began to counter what it felt was Irish interpretations of the Belfast Agreement and American acceptance of Irish interpretations, and said, hold on a minute, the Belfast Agreement doesn't just do things like I want to keep a border seamless, as is an Irish nationalist argument. It also protects Northern Ireland's place in the UK. So what this then is doing is is going further. What this deal is going further than that. And with regard to the point on checks, already in the Windsor framework for the Green Lane, for stuff that's going into Northern Ireland, the checks is, I think it's currently down to 10%, what you call visual checks. Mm-hmm. Just checking that roughly is what seems to be there is what you would expect to be, and what seems to be in the lorry is what you would expect to be in the lorry. And that's going down to 5%. So that might go down to nothing. Yes. So in that respect, he will be able to say that.
OK, but a lot of it was in the Windsor framework.
Yeah, I mean, the Windsor framework was so if you go all the way back, the simplest way to explain it is this. There was this period in the Northern Ireland Protocol when a number of parties from Northern Ireland, including the Alliance Party, I think it was actually after they went down to meet Simon Coveney in Dublin, I think it was around about then, some years ago, where they were coming out of the most severe period of lockdown, where they called for rigorous implementation of the Northern Ireland Protocol. Now, given that there's a lot of criticism, and I think unionists have made numerous mistakes, even though I edited a unionist newspaper, I'd say that, and there's been a lot of sneering at unionists, I think that position, we can say, was not one that has been sustained. No one ended up calling for rigorous implementation of the protocol, not even the EU. Mm-hmm. There was a realization the protocol was unworkable. So there were those changes with the framework. And I think that this going down to zero checks is significant. But then it comes to the question, and here's a key thing, because I know there's a lot of information to absorb here. One of the DUP's tests is, it's much mentioned, seven tests,
yeah,
was that it will not, I think it's arguably the most significant DUP test, because it says it will not, what emerges will not constitute a border in the Irish Sea. So then the question is this. Is there a border, for example, on the island of Ireland? If you say, as has been protected by all the things that have happened, that there is no checking on the Irish land border, there wasn't before Brexit, there isn't now, therefore there isn't a border. Well, you could say that, and that would be maybe an Irish nationalist argument that it's of no consequence, it doesn't really exist. But then the other argument is, well, there is a massive legal change at the border. There's a change of currency. There's X, Y, and Z. It's an international frontier. The fact that there are no changes doesn't mean that there isn't a border. Now I think those arguments are going to be applied to the Irish Sea border. I think Sir Geoffrey Donaldson and others will be saying, well, this is so seamless that it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a further reduction in paperwork. There's going to be virtually no checks within the Green Lane. There's going to be constitutional protection. So there's going to be a protecting of Northern Ireland goods going to Great Britain, which was always not going to be checked. That's going to be written more into law. And then there will be other unionists led by Jim Allister. Jim Allister is a KC. He's a very
King's Counsel, a barrister. Yeah.
And Nigel Dodds also has a Cambridge First in law, who'll be saying, well, hold on a minute, the underlying constitutional problem of a border, even if it isn't enforced, remains.
Okay, I want to bring in Rory O'Donnell, Ben, at this point, former UK Brexit negotiator with the EU and now a partner with the consultancy firm Penta. Rory, good morning to you.
Morning.
So you're in this really interesting position where you helped negotiate the original deal, the UK-EU deal. And the tension here is that the more that the UK embraces the Brexit freedoms and wants to and aspires to and tries to diverge from EU rules, the greater the friction is likely then when sending goods between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. So has this deal with the DUP given Rishi Sunak's government less wriggle room on that front, on divergence?
I don't think so. I mean, you're right, there is the potential for divergence, and the divergence is two-way. The UK could change its rules, the EU could change its, and we're about to enter into quite a busy period in Europe with elections in June and a new commission by the end of the year, and new commissioners wanting to look at what legislative steps they might want to take. So both sides can diverge. I think, though, the important thing about goods moving from NI to GB is that the responsibility for checking those goods lies with UK authorities. It's not a matter for the EU. So the UK can decide how much checking it wants to do. I mean, Ben said, and he's right, that there was always unfettered access for NI goods into GB. And I think this, whatever has been agreed, when we see the detail, will underline that. But that doesn't necessarily. So if rules change and Irish goods find their way into GB via the north, it's a UK decision what they do about that.
Oh, right. My sense is the responsibility lies with the UK for that.
Yes.
Because Ben is reporting this morning, or his paper is reporting, that the government will also change regulations to stop Northern Ireland being used as a backdoor into the Great Britain market. So ban food and feed goods travelling from Northern Ireland to Great Britain unless they come from a Northern Ireland establishment or are for personal use. So on the UK side, in practical terms, does that not increase the amount of paperwork that will have to be addressed?
In theory, it does. In practice, I think it'll be interesting to see how that's implemented. And if I had to guess, I think the implementation may be less rigorous than some other border checks that happen on frontiers into the EU.
Mm-hmm. There's such a tightrope, and you'll be so well aware of this from your negotiations, between the ambitions of the Brexiteers and the likely impact on trade and diverging from the EU rules. Do you think that sensitivity is heightened now as a result of this?
I don't think so. Look, of course, you have to, for any deal that you do, it has to be sellable politically back home. And we saw Theresa May had serious problems with that in sort of 2018-19. I think many of the Brexiteer MPs in the Tory backbenches look to the DUP. And if the DUP say that this is something they can live with, I think the majority of Brexiteer MPs will be happy to go along with it.
I was reading, Ben, if I can come back to you on this, a vox pop that was taken in around East Belfast, and there seemed to be a fairly broad welcome for this deal from people who are going about their daily business. Does that tally with what you've been hearing?
Well, I'm somewhat wary of vox pops, but although we do them ourselves, but what they really tell us, what I would say is two things in answer to your question. The first thing is, one thing that's become very apparent to me is, if I look back, a problem that Sinn Féin and Irish Republicans had, unionists are not going to have, and it's this. For decades, the problem that Irish nationalists and Republicans had was that the status quo, the way things were, was that we were in the UK. And they had great difficulty in getting people that bothered about that, including many people from a nationalist Catholic or Catholic background. I would be concerned from a unionist perspective that what will happen that might be reflected in some of these vox pops is that there will now be a status quo in favour of that people don't even really understand, because people have their lives to live, they're not studying constitutional law, and that they'll be happy enough with things because there'll be checks that they never know about, and they won't be thinking about constitutional implications. That's the first thing I'd say in answer to your question. Second thing is, perhaps more pertinently to today, how is, because another interviewer asked me this, how has have unionists reacted to this? The short answer to what's happened in the last 48 hours, the short answer is we don't know, it's too early. I think there's a muted reaction. I think it's like what I was saying about the DUP having sort of people subconsciously made a decision over the last few months, not the last few days, about whether or not it's better to go back to Stormont. And I think that there is a muted reaction. We don't know how that will turn out. Mm-hmm. And a really deep-seated, and I know I did say this yesterday, and I won't labour the point, but I don't think we can get away from a deep-seated and, I think, reasonable sense amongst unionists that Sinn Féin are allowed to play by different rules. So I think the reaction in the immediate sense is quite subdued, not particularly thrilled.
Ben, on that, on the Sinn Féin question, Mary Lou MacDonald saying yesterday that a united Ireland is now within touching distance. How did you feel when she said that?
Well, I know there are different reactions to that, and I even have noticed some unionists who are rather pleased with it, because they feel that it goes against the idea that Michelle O'Neill is going to be a first minister for all. What would be the response of a first minister for all if one community is feeling sore and one community is feeling, as I felt yesterday, that Sinn Féin, with regard to its three-year collapse, wasn't even criticised by a Conservative and Unionist government. Not even criticised, let alone threatened with anything. They weren't even criticised. So when you come into that situation,
they're supposed to be on the
pre-existing thing, and then you start
pointing out the Conservatives there who are supposed to be on the Unionist side. Let's not forget. You know,
my point is this: if the Conservatives and Unionists are feeling that the Conservative and Unionist Party is not helping them, amongst other anxieties, does it help the atmosphere in Northern Ireland for Mary Lou McDonald to be coming in and saying it's within touching distance, a united Ireland? Is that the sort of rhetoric of a First Minister for all? And also, remember, here's another thing. Remember that Unionists have been taunted and goaded for years. We're told the game is up. We're told there's demographic change. We're told that it's unstoppable. We're told to join the conversation. Does anyone ever notice that Unionists, maybe even out of politeness, don't say to Irish nationalists, come and join the conversation about a wonderful UK? Come and talk about a post-Brexit future.
You're around, Ben, for a long time. The taunting goes both ways. Politicians
play
with politics.
In that respect, it doesn't.
But this is what politicians do. Sinn Féin's stated aim at the top of their list is for a united Ireland. So, you know, the timing might be off from your point of view, but you're hardly surprised that they said it.
Well, I mean, and as I said, there are some people who are pleased that they said it because they show that, yes, that Sinn Féin is going to behave like that. I do think that there is a wider issue. And again, there are some unionists who are quite pleased about this. Mm-hmm. There is polling that shows in the Republic that a reluctance to change the flag in the event of an all-Ireland, a reluctance to change the anthem in the event of an all-Ireland, a reluctance to join the Commonwealth, that friendly association that even countries that were once colonies that suffered codified racial discrimination, a friendly association that they have joined, and that the Republic of Ireland, which was once a fully integrated part of the UK, not a colony, has not joined, and that the reluctance to make any of these gestures, including the rise of the OOA up the Ra chant, and when any of us object to it, as I have tried to explain, unionists upset about that on RTE, the comeback is often, oh, but it's harmless, and so on. So I think that there are some unionists who are quite pleased at this, because they would argue that the new Ireland that we all hear about is actually an unchanged Ireland and therefore isn't going to happen.
Roy, what have you to say listening to all of that? What's your take on what Mary Lou McDonald said yesterday and the impact that it might have on unionist sentiment about all of this?
It's really interesting. So, look, I would describe myself, I grew up in Derry, I would describe myself as a sort of constitutional nationalist, and I spent over 30 years working for the UK government, including the last 9 or 10 negotiating Brexit, the Northern Ireland Protocol and the Windsor Framework. So that's where I start.
An interesting perspective then.
But I spent most of my time in Brussels explaining to Europeans, so non-Irish, non-UK, sensitivities that unionist community in Northern Ireland felt, and why when we were looking at the protocol and subsequently the framework, that, you know, it's both technical and political, and the political is very important, and you have to recognise the feelings of the unionist community, and you have to take steps to try and address them. And I take a similar approach to questions of United Ireland. So whilst I myself would be in favour, I don't think I have a vote. I haven't lived in Northern Ireland for far too long, over 30 years. But I'm not opposed to it. I think the important thing, though, and I agree with Ben to an extent, I think the important thing, though, is that a United Ireland should be a new Ireland. And it should be an Ireland that would recognise that there is a significant population in the north of this new island that needs to be accommodated within whatever the arrangements are. Mm-hmm. And I think a discussion looking at those sorts of questions, rather than Yaboo from Sinn Féin saying it's just round the corner and a unionist voice that says this is unacceptable and we can't have it, I think a discussion about how could a new Ireland look, I think would be an interesting discussion, and it would need to accommodate the unionists in the north.
All right, well, listen, we'll leave it there for now. Rory O'Donnell and Ben Lowry, thank you both very much. And if we get any word on what is in that deal, if it's published in our time when we're on air, we'll certainly bring it to you. Right now, though, we'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.